Okay, and the fun part is I had no idea what that was.
We're just pressing buttons here.
Yeah, right. I was, you know, I thought it was actual intro music. And
the producer of the board is having technical difficulties.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Okay. Fish and Frank in the chair here, Robert in the chair across from me, and we have Captain Kale in the guest spot. And this is Talking Tarpon Radio, Tarpon Talk, Talk Tarpon Radio. I don't know, it's one of those things. But anyway, we're going to talk about tarpon. And this is a segment dedicated to the pursuit, the capture, the release, the jumping, the, I don't know, it's about tarpon. All right, now.
And don't forget the boredom, the monotony, and all that other stuff that goes with tarpon fishing, too.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things that go along with it. Now, we just put up a new tarpon map today, and to go with that, it seems like the fish did a big move from just a couple of days ago. We did the other one, I think, on Monday. And yeah. Things have changed a lot since then. And that's why we're doing another one right now. Because the bulk of the fish were concentrated up in Boca Grande Pass. There was some captive in that. They were working heavy along the beaches. So what changed, Robert?
Two things, really. You know, the main thing is it's the bad thunderstorms that have been just off the beaches. You know, that's been kind of freaking those fish out because they don't like lightning. They don't like the thunder. They tend to move around away from all that stuff. And then Kale was talking about it earlier that, you know, it's the end of their spawn. Their last spawn was on that full moon. That was like their real big hurrah. So those fish start to spread out more evenly. And then they also try to come into where all the major food is at to replenish their supply from basically starving themselves for our...
Well, I remember back in the 70s, I go to a three-day festival, and, you know, there wouldn't be anything to eat or drink available for 40 or 50 miles from around the festival. So by the time you got home, you were pretty much ready to relax for a day and chow down.
Absolutely.
So I guess it'd be the same thing.
Well, when you run for 3 months on lust... Yeah. You know, like the tarpon do, you know, you do have to refuel at some point.
So what we're seeing is intermittent fishing along the beaches. The beaches are still pretty good fishing right now, but we're seeing up inside on the hill. What's going on in Boca Grande Pass itself? We still have tarpon there.
Yeah.
It's not the numbers there was 4 or 5 days ago, you know, or 3 or 4 days ago, whatever it was. But there's still fish in Boca Grande Pass, and from what I'm hearing, it's mostly an early bite.
Yeah, very early morning bite, like just before daylight until 7:30, 8 o'clock, it seems like, and then they're kind of either disappearing or moving way inside.
I mean, there's some tarpon going to be there most of the day.
Yeah, there's always going to be fish in there all off and on all day long.
But you're going to move up inside on the hill, and... find the hill, you just go inside of Boca Grande Pass, and once you get past the intercoastal, that's kind of where they call the hill. It's on the east side of the intercoastal waterway, directly in line with Boca Grande Pass there. I kind of outlined it for you in red and yellow dots. Now, the reason I did red and yellow was because there's a lot of fish there, but it's a little different.
Yeah, it's a lot of juveniles or sub-adults. You know, they're in that 20 to 40 pound range with a few in the 60, 80 pound range, but there's a lot of little guys in there right now, which is pretty cool. And they're in different groups. I mean, there's groups of 100, 150 fish, and then other groups that are only 20 fish. But they're fun size, very, very active.
And they're usually more apt to eat.
Yeah, yeah, they can definitely usually, they're stupider. You know, they're younger fish, they tend to have more food on their mind and more apt to eat whatever you throw in front of them, but like little paddle tails and something you'd normally be throwing at a redfish or a trout, they
right.
really seem to like those DOA cows.
All right. Yeah, those little, the medium size one, not the tiny one and not the big one, but the middle
right.
size one. Anyway, now, Kale, you've been out on the water here quite a bit the last few days, right?
Yeah.
What's going on up in the harbor?
The other day we sat in between the Pirate Harbor hole and Pirate Harbor and watched a ton of tarpon come through. They had absolutely no interest in stopping and eating. They were on a mission. And it looks like the majority of them were headed towards the upper harbor. We found them again yesterday in the mouth of the Myakka River.
Okay.
The morning bite wasn't that great. Just a handful rolling here and there. We went snook fishing until the tide turned to outgoing, and they were a lot more rolling and a lot more feeding at the beginning of that outgoing tide. But it didn't last long. It lasted about an hour, and then they all just kind of disappeared again.
Okay.
Now, ton of bait out there.
Robert,
tons.
You were telling me that the fish in the middle of the harbor, let's say in the 20-foot hole, the upper hole, aren't rolling as much. There's a lot of fish there, but they're not showing themselves the way you would think tarpon would in that spot.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of there all the way over to the west side from that area. It's not just over the hole. It's from the hole all the way to the sandbar on the west side.
Yeah, exactly. You know, about that 6 foot of water, even less than that sometimes,
yeah,
all the way out to the 20-foot hole. And I was going to ask Kale that because I'm hearing this from other customers, but since he's been out there, I'm just not hearing of the fish rolling the way they normally do for what the water temperature is, the lack of salinity, and the amount of food out there. You know, normal situations, they're rolling
a
lot.
Nuts.
You should visibly be seeing them. You may not see them free jumping on every blink of the eye, but you should be able to see a rolling fish anywhere you look,
right,
at any given time. And the guys are telling me they're not.
No, they're not. And this is where a good side scan sonar pays off.
Yeah. Now, you were mentioning bait. How's the bait situation around that 20-foot hole and through there? Are you seeing bait
it's
there? Or
ridiculous. There are so many schools of thread fins out there. And it's kind of weird. You get over on that west side where the Peace River is draining down through there, the Myakka River, and that water is just coffee brown. And you can see green spots of bait out there.
Wow.
They're so thick. It looks like a green pool coming at you.
And I've heard it's been extremely segregated, too. Like, you got the 4 inches are in one school, the 6 inches are in another school. They're very separated in areas around
and
the harbor.
That's the weird thing also. That seems to be more on the west side that they're segregated. You go over to the east side in that cleaner, saltier water and throw the net on those thread fins, and you'll get them anywhere from snook and redfish size all the way up to the big full-size tarpon threadies.
Now, we came across the 41 Bridge. Robert and I were down south. We went down to North Fort Myers to check out the new store, new location, get some measurements on it, because I've still got to design the whole darn thing, which I got mostly done. But when we were coming back, we saw about 4 pods of bait thread fins as we were crossing the bridges between Punta Gorda and Port Charlotte.
If you were seeing them in the morning,
it was probably about 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
9:30, I guess. 9:30, I think we got back.
50-50 thread fins, glass minnows. The glass minnows that are in the upper harbor are so big, it's not even funny.
Really?
They're full silver sides now.
I'll be done.
And I thought, oh, those are perfect looking bait for snook and redfish, and I threw the net on them and come up blank. No, wait a minute. Now I can get these thread fins without fail. Went over them again, threw the net, perfect shot, nothing. So they're definitely glass minnows because they're shooting through the net.
I was going to say, you weren't dumb enough to throw your quarter on them, were
you? No.
Okay, because they're probably the heaviest net I ever had loaded up with gilled fish.
Yes.
I was used to throwing my 3/8 over the top of the glass minnows to get down and get the bigger,
right,
greenbacks and stuff that were hanging out under the thread or under,
sure,
the glass minnows. And there were some nice greenbacks down there, used to throw in the 3/8, but I said, ah, heck, and without thinking about it, took my quarter,
no,
because I was gilling a few of the greenbacks because they weren't really good size yet. They were throwable size, but not big. And, man, that net hit that school of glass minnows, and the whole net just swam right off,
yeah,
sideways.
And you know that's not good.
Oh,
no.
And, I mean, it didn't even hardly go to a umbrella shape yet. It was,
no,
still flat, and the net just started swimming off. There was so many glass minnows stuck into it.
That's scary.
I ended up having to take it home, laid it out on the boat ramp, and you can do it driveway, sidewalk, let the sun get to it for a while, then took the pressure cleaner to knock the bait out of it, because there was so much, I couldn't get it out. Wow. I would have been a year picking bait out of that.
Run the horn all the way up, tie it off, cleat it off, get up on plane, throw it over the side of the boat. Drag it behind the boat on plane, it'll suck all those little glass minnows out.
Okay.
Ask me how I know.
I'm going to say no, I'm not going to do it.
Works like a champ.
Yeah, but when mine luck, that lead would hit the water, skip just a little bit, end up right in the prop.
Yeah, probably.
No.
That's why you get going first and then throw it out.
Yeah, no, I could see me with that net caught in a prop. But that explains why we've got so many tarpon up here in the upper harbor. So I'm going to guess thread fins is probably going to be the bait to use up here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hearing a mixed variety. Guys have been doing real good on the thread fins. But a handful of guys have been picking up some stuff on the bait busters have been working real well because they're mimicking, yep, obviously, the thread fins. And then a handful of guys have been willing to try catfish tails because there's all the population of catfish has pretty moved out to the center of the harbor,
yeah,
to feed on,
yeah,
those glass minnows and thread fins.
It's catfish season.
Yeah, now,
but it's amazing how many guys are afraid not to use catfish.
Or afraid to use catfish, not afraid not to.
Well, most of them just think, the weird thing is, I mean, and I understand the respect of being afraid of using a catfish because it can be life-threatening, but the fact of the matter is that 90% of the population out there thinks that it's only something that can be successful in the rivers. I don't know what that mythology or wives tale is.
It's the most prevalent bait out there. There's more catfish than anything out there,
yeah,
so
exactly.
That's what I'd be using for bait.
I agree.
But like we said before, on the Area Fishing Report, if I was going to use him for bait, if he's under 10 inches, let's say 6, 8 inches, you know, because even those small ones grab a big chunk of bait.
Yeah.
And I would take my diagonal cutters, clip the fins, put a big hook through them, and run him out live whole. But if he was bigger than 10 inches, all I'm going to do is cut a chunk of the tail meat out, not using the head or the flipper part of the tail, just the nice tail meat on it. And I'd throw the head and the carcass back in the water, and, you know, it just brings up more fish. It's chum.
Yeah.
So I think a big chunk of tail meat would be just as enticing as probably that whole live fish swimming around. Now, if you're going to put a live catfish on, would you bobber it or would you freeline it?
Honestly, I would probably bobber it because they swim around so sporadically, even if you're at a drift or if you're at anchor, that I'd want to know where they're at.
Cause balloon it.
They're just going to probably tangle up any other lines that you might have out.
So, Kale, you're thinking balloon as well?
Yeah, I like the balloon.
Your reasoning on the balloon?
I could use a little bit bigger catfish without them swimming the bobber down. it helps in the current, too.
Yeah, I like a balloon when it's like those days where there's not a breath of air out there.
Right.
And the current's not moving super well because a balloon will pick up just the slightest.
So you're talking a difference in bobber, but whether it's bobber, balloon, or whatever, why would you put them under a float rather than just freeline them?
Well, I like the balloon because they struggle more. They're fighting that flotation
pulling
on them.
They want to get to the
bottom. Right. And it's that much more vibration you're putting out there for the tarpon to find. Which is
more distressed fish.
Right, it's more important in this murky water where they're not hunting by eyesight. They're hunting by vibration.
And so they're hunting by sound or smell, not
right,
by
right.
seeing.
I want him out there making that noise, struggling against that float.
All right, here's the next question before the panel. And you guys are the panel today. Okay, so, you know, as we've got our panel going.
It's like that old 60s wood paneling.
Yeah, what paneling? Wood paneling. And so, anyway, let's see. Yes, I thought it was funny. Okay, so the question before the panel is where to put the hook. Robert, would you put it in the jaw, through the dorsal, back by the tail, by the anal opening? Where would you put it?
On a catfish, honestly, I'm going to probably just go right through his bottom jaw and right out his mouth.
Right out through the top of the mouth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not the roof of the mouth, just the bottom jaw and come out right out of his mouth.
Oh, okay. So you're just hooking the lower jaw.
Yep.
All right. Kale?
I will usually go in the mouth and up through.
All the way through the roof
right.
of the mouth.
Or like you said, you're taking a pair of cutters and cutting his
fins off.
A lot of times I will come right in between the eyes and that fin and come across the top of them.
Okay.
Especially if I have them on a bobber.
So both times you're head hooking them. You're not going by the dorsal or behind the dorsal.
You're kind of at the nape of the neck, top of the back, I would say.
Right.
Coming across it and just barely getting that skin. Skin's pretty tough, so they're not going to pull that hook.
So, you know, a lot of times when I'm putting a fish under a bobber, I'm hooking it by the dorsal or just back center, behind center of the dorsal fin, allowing them to stay upright more, to swim better, you know, more pull, because it's easier to drag it. If you got the hook up by the head, it always wants to turn the fish around. But if you've got them hooked, you know, in the last half behind the center dorsal, it allows them to, you know, stay upright and pull that hook harder. But neither one of you guys are into that, huh?
No, I find that they fight that bobber a little better.
Okay.
And the other thing that I'll do a lot of times when I'm out there is those tarpon are going to move, and you're going to have to move with them. So I'll idle from spot to spot.
And he'll drag along better.
It almost acts like a diving lure.
Right.
Hooking him there. He's not flopping on the surface behind that bobber. He's actually coming down and swimming as I go. So you're almost trolling him.
All right, Robert, why are you doing it through the head?
Same reason or
different?
Similar reason, but the main thing, the reason why I go through the bottom jaw is just because it's easier and a little bit safer for me to hook them up that way rather than trying to get through just that. They got such a hard skull, and just kissing underneath that skin to get it to go through can be a real bear sometimes, or going through the nasal opening or the eye socket. It can be tricky. I just find it to be a lot easier for me.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good answer. All right. There's tarpon on the ICW. If you're kind of going from mid-Sanibel up through Captiva Pass, but not as much between Captiva and Boca.
Yeah, and I don't know why that is, because there should be fish there. Just not hearing about them. It seems like there's a lot of singles and triples Captiva South.
Yeah.
Especially like Captiva Rocks and heading down there towards St. James City, but just not hearing of the numbers.
Could be a question of bait. Or boat traffic. It's a little wider down there. It's pretty narrow going from Captiva up towards Boca.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it could be a matter of any one of those issues. So
I must still go back to the thunderstorms and stuff that are just making us get less fishing reports because of how hopscotch it is down there with that garbage.
Well, it's harder to get people to tell you what's going on with the fishing if they're not on the water.
Right. Yeah. So exactly.
And the thunderstorms have been odd too. They've been tracking very weird.
Okay.
Not very many of them are coming across the harbor like they usually do. Those ones that have been coming in from Boca Grande North seem to hit the west wall and then turn and run right up the west side of the harbor, up through Harbor Heights, up that way. The ones that start below Boca have been coming up Burnt Store Road. It's been strange. Usually they cross.
Yeah, but right now they're going to follow more natural ground. They're not going to want to go, and there's so much heat coming off of Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte.
Yeah.
The streets, the rooftops, the cars, all that. There's a lot of the temperature of the air there, and that rising air creates kind of a boundary and a wall.
They
and then
you've
got
those
41
pathways
and I-75. Yeah. So I'm looking at the radar right now, and there's a lot of storms out by my place, Harbor Heights, east and north, and what that is over natural ground. You got a lot more moisture in the ground because it's rained enough that it evaporates, goes up, causes a cloud. The cloud then rains back down. Water, you know, rain gets more rain.
Yep.
But from I-75 west towards the coast, it's more built up. There's not as much water. There's not as much ground. There's no evaporation. And that's why they're either on the harbor or east of I-75.
We sat there Saturday or Sunday, and watching and waiting. We were fishing the I-75 bridge, and do we got to run? Do we got to go? What? And it would stop right there at the shoreline.
Yeah, it's amazing how that hot air rises, creates a barrier wall. first became aware of it one time watching a Weather Channel, and they were showing the storms going around Omaha, Nebraska. Big storm front coming up, and then the storm would literally split going around the city because so much natural ground outside, it's cooler, but the heat from the city actually created a force field, a shield around it. And, you know, it was kind of weird how that worked. And then I got watching, and then the Peace River starts a different climate. North of the Peace River and south, Punta Gorda is actually on a different climate level than Port Charlotte. And then Fort Myers, after you cross the Caloosahatchee, is in another climate again. So the two rivers form climate changes. And thinking about the river of water and then a river of asphalt, like I-75, 41, and that's where all these weather things kind of come from. Again, direct observational science, where you look at this and goes, well, if a body of water will cause a climate change, because I've seen it snow twice in Port Charlotte, but never in Punta Gorda. And palm trees that live pretty darn good in Punta Gorda may or may not make it in Port Charlotte, but in Fort Myers, city of palms. And the only thing different is 30 miles and two rivers.
Right.
So, you know, that's where all these things come from about why we talk about I-75 and the river of asphalt and then the buildup of houses, streets, cars, creating these force fields that keep the rain out of the city, the urban areas where people live, and it rains a lot where open pasture land and farmland.
Right.
And if you're out there tarpon fishing for a whole day, you've got to get good at reading those storms.
Anytime you're out there fishing this time of year.
You should be super.
Oh, we're on the fax machine line. Let me drop that. Okay, there we go.
That was neat.
Yeah, well.
Almost like the bat phone.
Yeah, we have I have a Bluetooth phone line and a standard phone line. Well, the standard phone line's hooked into the fax one. So
nice.
That's what that happened. I never had that happen before in the show. Oh, a new one.
I thought we had a caller.
Yeah, caller. Yeah, how would they even know when we're doing it? I don't even know when we're going to do this show. All right, so how about trolling for tarpon? Because there's so many tarpon out in the middle of the harbor, any guesses on what you could do?
I personally would much rather troll than sit and fish for them. I think it's more effective sometimes. Trolling those bait busters works very, very well. Even slow trolling a thread fin or a catfish works very well. My personal favorite are the big rattle traps, especially in this dark brown water.
I would rely on the bait busters to catch them, but I would have a 3/4 ounce rattle trap down there just to bring attention to my bait busters.
And my rule is,
I would be using it as a teaser more than a fish catching bait.
My rule is 3 catfish and we're trolling. During tarpon fishing. Period. 3 catfish, we're trolling. Because you'll catch a lot less catfish on the troll than you will just sitting there letting that bait swim around where it's easy to get to. The tarpon will put a little bit more effort into it.
Gotcha.
The problem with trolling, there's going to be 15 to 30 other boats out there giving you the stink eye because you're running around on your main engine trolling through their drift or their anchor. So you do have to be a little bit conscious about it. And you do have to be a little careful with it.
Not a little, a lot. Yeah, you really want to be aware of all the other fishermen out there when you're doing it. But the good part about doing that trolling part of it is that there's so many fish peppered throughout the hole, all the holes and outside of the holes. You can avoid everybody by many hundreds of yards and still
be 200 yards away and you're still going to catch fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
you don't have to be right on top.
They're going to boil up right over there, and then the next thing you know, they're boiling up over here, and we talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
You don't chase the rolling fish. Nope. You just go to the area.
Yeah.
And if you're trolling, especially if you got a rattle trap down there, you're going to call the fish to you. I wouldn't worry about you finding the fish. They will find you. And having the, I would say, a DOA bait buster, the Savage trout, that swimming mullet looking thing, and a rattle trap out. If I had those three things out, I would be confident to be 200 yards away and still catch fish.
In a heartbeat.
I get a little closer because that's just the jerk off
of
me coming out.
You like to be annoying, that's
and
all.
Yeah. I love sitting there and having them yell at me for running on my main engine and spooking the fish and have both of my rods go off at the same time in the middle of that.
Well, the main thing about it is not changing the tempo of the motor. when you're idling along, that's not bothering the fish because they're used to outboards. Otherwise, they would never come in the harbor.
Right.
They would not be in the harbor at all or anywhere near shore. They would all be out in the middle of the Gulf if the motor spooked them because there's enough boats out there where they would just never come into Shoal Harbor. But it's when they don't know what the boat does. When they hear the motor run and then just stop, that freaks them out. But a steady idle coming and going isn't bothering anything.
Nope. And a slow troll.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 2.2 mile an hour because that's as slow as I can go is the perfect speed.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it's kind of like trolling for walleye and salmon, sometimes you want to speed up, slow down, speed up a little, slow down, just a mile an hour or two.
But I don't do that when other boats are around. I keep my speed constant out of respect for them. Even if they don't know I'm respecting them, I'm still doing it that way.
Well, I don't think 200 more RPM or less is going to make that big of a difference.
It does. I've seen it make a big difference on what goes on with fish. And that being said, fishing with my dad, we've got a little outboard on the back, and he pulls around behind an island, and there's no boats anywhere. It's quiet as heck, and he didn't get where he wants, throws it in reverse, brings it back, drops the anchor in, casts up to shore, and immediately catches a redfish or a snook or something like that.
Right.
And he's done everything as wrong as a human could possibly be wrong, and it still works.
Yeah.
But see, I'm on the other side of that scale. I'm not like my dad. If I go in there, I hit reverse on the engine, or I, you know, bang the anchor in, I'm never going to see a fish.
That's the way I am.
It's never going to happen.
You're going to sit there for a half hour and have a lunch and be as super quiet as possible, then maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, I don't get that. You know, my dad is one of those guys, it doesn't matter what he does. He throws the line up by the shore, he catches fish. So, anyway, but getting back to it, what's going on with the beaches? Everybody loves fishing tarpon along the beaches. It's beautiful. You know, it's the beaches. I mean, people come from all over the world to go to see the Florida beach.
The exact opposite. I hate tarpon fishing on the beach.
Okay.
I do. I think that's when they're most frustrating sometimes. You're trying to keep up with them. You're trying to get ahead of them. The trolling motor's too slow. The engine's too fast. And for the last month or so, I'd say the beaches were the place to be, especially north of us. I haven't been out there on the beaches in the past month, so I really don't know what's going on with them.
Well, I know that there's fish out there, but we're going back to the same thing with the storms again, that has been inconsistent with the reports. But I know that the fish are out there off and on all summer long, so it's a great place to go, especially this time of year, to find a lot of your smaller groups of fish. And for some reason, after that spawn in June, they tend to get less pressure and tend to be a little bit happier fish. They're usually milling around a little bit slower. They're not greyhounding towards the pass to get ready to go out for a major feed or a major breed. You know, those fish can be sometimes a heck of a lot more cooperative, but at other times they are frustrating because you're actually physically seeing the entire group of fish. It's not like in the harbor where it's dark water and all you're seeing is a couple fish here and there rolling. You're actually seeing that whole school of 20, 100, 200 fish that are just either daisy chaining or just wadded up in a tight little ball. So
visually more impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's impressive and frustrating, like Kale's saying, because you're seeing all these fish and nothing's happening at that particular moment as far as them feeding, because you're throwing that bait perfect into them and they just flip you the fin and just kind of just stay there and mill around it.
Flip you the fin.
But yeah.
He's not far off.
You know, and then you go down 200 more yards and cast out in front of a group of 10 fish and you're hooked up immediately. But it's definitely much more stimulating.
Yeah, visually it's a lot more exciting to see these big, you know, massive schools of fish and all that. And I think right now you still got a good shot on the beach, but I don't think that beach fishing is going to be as good in the next month or so. I think it's going to be more of a harbor affair. So if you still want that beach experience, now is the time to get in on the last few weeks of fishing them on the beaches. and then you're going to have to come up to harbor to find them, or on the ICW or somewhere. They're not going to be as readily available along the beaches.
Or be prepared to put a lot more miles on your boat to look for them.
Yeah. So I had a guy I was telling about the beaches. I'm not running that far. I just ain't going to make those runs. It's just too much. I don't want to do it. And so he's fishing them up in the harbor when they were a little more iffy. And that's one thing. It's not uncommon to put 40, 50 miles on a boat beach fishing.
Oh, no, not at
all. Definitely. And you don't have very many options. If the tarpon aren't biting, it's not like you can pick up anchor, run to the other side of the harbor, and go fishing for snook and redfish to make up for it. You know, it's a gamble going out there. It's either you do or you don't.
Yeah. I mean, and that's all, I guess, right on the money with everything that's been going on with what people are saying about it. It's just, you know, kind of a little sporadic along the beaches, but it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And the harbor fishing is going to get better. So if I was going to do it right now, I'd take advantage of going to the beach, Boca Raton Pass, up on the hill, work in those areas that aren't going to be as good in a month, where the harbor fishing is only going to get better and better. And it will peak out somewhere in September, I would say, around September at the harbor. So you've got a long time to fish up in the harbor.
Definitely. And I think one of your best bets right now is the 41 bridge at night.
See, really? I'm not hearing much up there at night.
We were down there Friday, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Thursday night, Friday morning, and they were popping, hitting just about the whole length of the bridge.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. That's pretty impressive to hear, because I just haven't been hearing much at all, either Eljo Bean or Cape Coral. I mean, usually I'm hearing oddball miscellaneous reports from all those places at night, and I just haven't heard much in the last 2 weeks.
It's a little on the hard side to fish. You're going to get a lot of not tarpon bites.
Not tarpon.
Not tarpon. There's a lot of gar down there.
Not the tarpon.
So you do have a lot of gar rolling and slapping their tails, so you've kind of got to really listen to see, you know, was that a tarpon or not.
Right. Yeah, the gar activity this time of year, anywhere from, well, pretty much the entire harbor, but especially since once you pass marker one heading up the river,
yeah,
it gets very frustrating. That's why a lot of guys get frustrated about going up there above I-75. Even though there's a ton of tarpon there, you're going to get gar runs. But you're also going to be casting at gar, because you would swear that that was a tarpon and it was just his tail kind of coming down gently enough to confuse you.
That's, I rely more on my hearing than I do my eyesight.
Yeah, me too.
Was that a snook pop? Well, yeah, you've got that issue. But was that a snook pop or was that a mullet jumping?
Right.
You know? You get a little time out there, you can tell the difference between the two sound-wise.
Instantly.
And it's no different with the tarpon and the gar rolling. They've got a distinctly different sound when they roll.
They do, but there are times where those gar get in that real subtle slap of their tail where it's definitely confusing at times.
Well, not to mention, it's tarpon. You want tarpon. Everything becomes a tarpon.
Right.
The cobia rolling become tarpon. The gars rolling become tarpon. The cow-nose rays become tarpon.
It's the same thing in the Keys. When you're fishing for bonefish, you wouldn't think so. But you're going to chase down 20 cowfish before you get to your bonefish. Because they look identical.
Everything's tailing. A bonefish.
And the only way you can tell the difference is the cowfish are usually smaller and the tail's faster when he's trying to forage off the bottom. So it's really spinning. But, you know, other than that, you chase down all these cowfish because, like, as you said, everything's a bonefish. And the same thing underneath the bridges. When these fish are going, everything's a tarpon.
Right. Absolutely.
But I'd rather cast at a bunch of imaginary fish or opposite other types of fish, and rather than miss a shot at the one tarpon that is going to eat.
The only bad part about fishing the bridge is getting bait. That's your tough part. They want threadies. So you've got to get out there at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, net those threadies, and then babysit them until it's time to hit the bridge. That's
really
10, 12 hours.
See, I've never had that issue when I fish the bridge in the summertime.
I've used silver trout. I've used whiting, sugar trout. I've used pretty much every type of legal fish that you could use. So, but right now it's a thread fin thing,
they wanted those thread fins. Now, I wouldn't hesitate to use a big pinfish either.
Yeah, if you can find one.
That's the problem.
There's 10 million little silver dollar size out on the
quarter plus. Sized of them, but finding the big ones are pretty tough. That's why I like the thread fins. A lot of vibration. They stay alive in that. I don't even know what to call it now.
It's fresh water.
It's just
it's fresh
bad water. It's hot. It's nasty. It's fresh. But the thread fins seem to like it.
Yeah.
Well, that's an important issue as well. What are the fish wanting? Not what do we want to throw at them? And that's, you know, and it's like with style of fishing. You got to figure out what the fish want, not what you want to do. Because what you want to do is irrelevant. And really, what difference does it make to you if you're, you know, throwing a thread fin or a sugar trout or whatever, or freelining or bobber fishing? What you're there for is the hookups.
Right.
You got to do what you got to do.
Artificials work well at the 41 bridge also. I just don't like using them anymore. You know, now that we're getting good, strong, single hooks that work,
right?
I think it's now viable again. I just don't
like... Yeah, those
like,
VMCs are amazing.
Yeah.
That VMC hook, you take the back treble hook off your lure if you've got two or three treble hooks on it, leaving the forwardmost treble hook in place, but just crush the barbs down.
Right.
Because you don't want it stuck into you. You know, it's not hurting the fish. It's hurting you. So... crush the barbs on that front treble hook. That one's there to keep the lure acting correctly, and then replace the rear treble hook with the single hook. And if there's a middle one, just take it off. But you need to leave the forwardmost one on there.
I've actually been taking that off too.
Yeah, I know, but you don't do anything right. So,
I know.
You know, I mean, normal is.
I do it on the bombers because the bomber's the one lure that is productive with tarpon. I think is long enough to actually pin his jaw shut.
I actually, you know, I can see why you wouldn't, why you could remove them on the bomber. The bomber does swim better than any other lure minus the hooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's basically once you take that hook off, you know, I'm not big on putting the single hook in the front, though, and having the
me neither.
Treble
I take,
hook in the back.
I take them all off and just put a single hook on the rear. That's it.
Yeah.
You're never going to pin that fish's mouth shut with one hook.
All right, Robert, you're going to...
I agree with using just a single hook on the lure, pretty much.
With just the single hook in the back and not putting the one in the front?
Yeah. You know, because bomber's one of my more favorite ones to throw, but that... The Rapala, the big subwalk.
Right.
Yeah.
That lure works great with one hook in it, too, because it's a suspending style bait that's just staying barely under the surface. It doesn't change its action very much. But I did have problems when I was throwing the X-Wrap and the 12 or the 13, the big, big one. That one didn't want to seem to swim as good with just the single hook on the back of it. The other benefit is that you're usually throwing a pretty large plug. You can use that sometimes as the handle to grab a hold of when you go down to grab a hold of the fish. And
right.
Not having that hook in the way prevents it from burying in your hand even more so.
It's like a built-in boga grip.
I mean, you're the one that originally started messing with single hooks on lures. And I started playing with it and experimenting with it. I like that assist hook personally a little bit better. But I haven't played with that new single VMC hook as much as I need to. Well, I'm real curious to play with all those new Rapalas that are coming out with the single hooks on them and see how they do. Because that should be really cool because they've actually designed those lures with that single hook in mind and balanced a little bit better. So
yeah,
that should be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting because we're going to have those before we open up the store in Fort Myers. And we got to figure out room to put them in here. I mean, you know, it's just I've got over 1,500 different hard body lures, and yet we're adding more.
Yeah.
I'm like, did I get dropped on my head as a child? Well, it could be. I mean, with the stuff in my brain between the radiation treatments and everything else, there's every chance of something like that did happen. Yeah. So, Anyway,
between the radiation and the lightning strikes, I'm surprised you can light a cigarette without setting yourself on fire at this point.
So, anything else we need to go over on tarpon wise?
Not really. Just start playing with them some more because you're going to see a lot more fish getting. This July is always that weird month where they're, you know, like you said, out on the beaches and in the harbor, and they're moving around a lot, so a lot of guys get frustrated with it.
It's a transition period.
Yeah, exactly. So these fish are going to start to get more active as the month progresses in more convenient areas or up in the upper harbor for most people, but don't hesitate to go out and play on the beach, play in the intercoastal. I mean, change things up a little bit and take advantage of wherever those fish are at right now, because come August 1st, from August 1st usually all the way up until the first or second good cold snap of fall, those fish are just unbelievable up here.
Yeah,
and there's times like mid-August all the way through until the mid of end of September, the fishing can be much better up here than it can be down on the beaches of the passes during its peak time.
Right. They've got one thing on their mind now.
Yeah.
And that's feeding.
Yeah, they want to feed real heavy before they get ready to transition themselves to go offshore to migrate south to whether it's the Keys, Cuba, Central America, or even Africa.
Or spending their winter up in the rivers and our canals.
Yeah.
I think the one thing you need more
than... Well, we kept tarpon till the end of December in 2015.
Yeah.
I mean, literally right up at Christmas time, we were still catching tarpon.
Yeah,
and in the pass.
They were in Boca Grande Pass. They were up in the harbor. They were everywhere.
Yeah.
And then we had the cold weather hit. Now, the tarpon fishing will be good all summer long until we get our first few cold spells.
Right.
Now, if El Nino keeps going, that means we're going to have a long time yet, maybe November, December.
Yeah.
But if for some reason or other the El Nino slows down or decreases in strength, we could get October cold fronts.
Right.
And could push them out in October.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing you need right now is patience. Don't be in a hurry to go fish someplace else. If you see a change coming, work it past that change. If it's bright and sunny out there and you see a cloud bank coming over the harbor, wait it out. That can completely change everything. If you're on, you know, within an hour of a tide change, wait it through. See if they start biting on that tide change. That's exactly what they did yesterday. Stay in that area and work it a little bit longer than your impatience is telling you. And it may pay off.
Yeah, well, I agree with you for as far as the patience, because we're hearing so many reports of fish doing nothing, no bites, no hookups, no nothing, and then all of a sudden you've got an hour where everybody's hooked up,
yep,
and then it's over.
Exactly.
So hang in there with it.
Sounds perfect.
So anything else, Captain?
Not that I can think of. Don't be afraid to think out of the box. Sometimes stupid wins. You've got that goofy lure from up north. Give it a shot. Give it a troll. You never know. It's something different.
Okay.
We had that guy that was pulling full squid behind a bucktail, trolling them.
Yeah.
3 years ago and was destroying tarpon out there.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
That's the key to it, as you said. Experiment, because the best lure may be the one that you're trying, and you never know what's going to work and what's not going to work. So anyway, Fishing Frank here in the chair, and Robert in the chair across from me, and we have Captain Kale in the guest seat today, and we appreciate you listening to our tarpon stuff, and look forward to seeing you guys here at the store or sometime next fall at the new store in Fort Myers. So thank you, boys and girls. We will catch you on the next Tarpon Radio, Tarpon whatever. I have to look up and find out
right.
What exactly I was calling this. So anyway, so I know what the heck I'm saying.
Fish and Frank's Tarpon Talk.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things. Anyway, you guys have fun out there. Enjoy your summer, and we'll be here.